Take a network break. Get caffeinated and sugared up for our weekly review of tech news. We've got stories on Amazon, Cisco, Citrix, Arista, and more. I'm Drew Conry-Murray, and with me is Greg Farrow. Before we start the news, we have a few words from our sponsors, including a first-time network break sponsor, ExtraHop. ExtraHop is a leader in real-time IT analytics and a pioneer of wired data, the ultimate lens into digital transactions. The ExtraHop platform provides insight across the IT environment, from the data center to the edge devices to the cloud, helping IT leaders make data-driven decisions that enable them to optimize performance, security, and customer experience. And if you tweet at ExtraHop and mention Packet Pushers in the tweet, you can get a free t-shirt.
Oh.
Yeah, hey, how about that? This episode is also being brought to you by ThousandEyes. ThousandEyes delivers visibility into every network your organization relies on, from your data center to the cloud, so you can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root cause of network issues wherever they occur. Sign up for a free account at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers and also choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. You could just have your whole wardrobe coming out of network break, I think.
Yeah, sure, definitely. Like, my story is, of course, that one day I went to my wardrobe, and this was before t-shirts became a thing, when they actually used to give out proper collared cotton shirts.
Yes, that's right, polo shirts, yeah.
You remember, not polo shirts, but actual business shirts with...
Oh, button-up shirts, yeah.
Yeah, button-up shirts. You remember that era?
Mm-hmm.
That's, a lot of people won't remember that. And then I went to my cupboard one day and realized that the only shirts in my cupboard was 4 white shirts and about 17 shirts with Bay Networks and Nortel and Cisco. And I realized that actually every time I was going to work, I was wearing a banner ad on. So I picked up all those shirts and took them to the local charity shop, got rid of them, and went and bought shirts and said, I'm going to be a real grown-up now and wear like my own shirts instead of somebody else's. So I'm not personally a huge fan of t-shirts, but I certainly understand if you are.
I will say I love t-shirts because I have a lot of use for them. So always happy to have more in my drawer, but to each his own.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of, you know, as I'm getting older and more mature. And
are you saying I'm immature?
No, I didn't say that. You're putting words in my mouth now. I'm saying for me, you know, I find increasingly I want to wear grown-up shirts.
Very good.
All yeah, right, well, or something, you sit over there something with some sartorial flair, shall we?
Ooh, flair.
Sartorial flair, no less.
Sartorial, quite the vocabulary. All right, let's put that vocabulary to good use on our new show. Headline one, BGP large communities. This was a last-minute addition to the show. What is this about?
Ah, so as you know, my favorite whipping boy amongst the legacy networking community is BGP, which hasn't actually shown any signs of change in, 20 years. But this might be some sign that there's some common sense prevailing over at the ITF, an initiative to increase the size of the BGP community string to make it a large community. But in particular, it's linking it to the 32-bit ASN number. So we've seen the BGP fields break down into 16 and 16. This now expands it out to a 4-octet field, and there's a global administrative field. So this means that ISPs and internet-connected hosts can start to signal data between autonomous systems. So the idea would be is that you can give opaque information or opaque data sets and exchange them with your neighbor just using your AS community strings. And that's a big deal, right? Because a lot of these companies today really have no way of saying, I want these routes to be treated this way, or I want these routes to be treated this way, or to exchange some sort of policy or like meaningful data between two neighbor information systems. So, for example, you might want to say, I learned about this route in the Netherlands. I learned about this route in Japan. I learned about this route in the United States of America, and then send that on to your neighbor. So your neighbor now knows where your autonomous system learned about it, and so it could start to do more things. So there's a whole bunch of things. There's a really good white paper written in the ITF. Job Schneiders, who has been keeping me up to date with what's been happening here, has written an internet draft that talks about the usage of large BGP communities and some of the ideas about what they wanted to be able to achieve, you know, things like location-based selective no export in the BGP or selective AS path prepending. Maybe you only want to prepend if it's coming from a certain place or if it was announced from certain peers and so on and forth. There's a whole bunch of possibilities here, and it's actually been ratified. So now we have to wait for the vendors. If you've been buying a mainframe from Juniper or Cisco, a network mainframe, now you have to wait for your mainframe vendor to give you that feature. But at least the ITF has ratified it, and there seems like there's some momentum behind it. So, yeah, some actual real change in the internet. Who knew?
Who knew? All right.
Had to happen eventually, I thought.
Eventually, we're there.
Yeah, that's right. Modernization in the network at glacial pace, yeah.
All right, headline two, Amazon chimes in with unified communication service. Amazon, they're launching a unified communication service called Chime, which is aimed at business users. And according to Amazon, the service is going to work on PCs and Macs. plus mobile devices. It's entirely software driven. There's no gear to buy. Just install the app and go. Like other UCS platforms, it's got audio and video features, screen sharing, text chat, all that good stuff. It'll integrate with Outlook and Google Calendar so you can make schedules and get reminders. And pretty much this is squaring up against, you know, Microsoft, Cisco, Citrix, and others.
Yeah, real kick in the teeth for a lot of companies, actually. This GoToMeeting, WebEx, Cisco's WebEx, Cisco Spark, to some extent competes with Slack as well. And of course, Microsoft's Lynx, Skype, whatever it's called this week. It's very much a service that, how can I describe it? It's very simple. It's very straightforward. You go to the website, you download an app, it puts something into your browser. It uses the browser functionality. It's not too much that you wouldn't expect. It's basically audio calls, video sharing calls, screen sharing, and text chat, which is pretty much what everybody has got. So it's table stakes. It has some integration with your Outlook and Google calendars to make it easy to schedule meetings. Boom. Does it really change the needle? No. Does it matter because AWS is doing it? Yes. Everybody loves whatever AWS right now, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. But I think it proves a few things. One is building online collaboration software isn't hard. So things like what Cisco and Slack have done is obviously proving out to be, as a software project, not an insignificant challenge, but not one that's impossible to achieve if you're a big enough organization and you're motivated enough. So it's a trivial feature. So for Cisco Spark, the fact that they're going to be trading on that, oh, we've got the Tanberg collaboration and the UCS call managers, we can merge those together into this Spark product. That's good enough probably to sustain them, to maintain a very small market share. But they won't be happy that Amazon's moving into the market, I'm sure.
No, not at all. And I wonder, Amazon, I think, is pretty good at floating ideas to see if they get any traction. And I think, as far as I can tell, I know they offer, of course, business services through AWS, but it seems like this is the first real business application aimed at the end user. And it makes me wonder if this is a trial balloon to get into business like Office 365 or Google Docs.
It's going to be interesting in the sense that I don't think they want to get into that. These chat windows aren't about, like, when you build Google Docs or some sort of document sharing platform, you have to spend a lot of money building a web app that can build the docs, and then you have to start sharing the docs and duplicating the docs. I think that's something that Amazon shied away from. I don't think it's a very profitable business. I mean, Google can do it because it got there first. Dropbox has spent over 3 years building their Dropbox paper and still only in a very limited rollout. So maybe there's some magic behind that that makes it hard to do or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Or if it's just traction and that Google was there first and that's sort of the default that everybody uses.
And it's free, right? The Google Docs is free. Charging for Google Docs is, what are you going to do to make money out of it?
I wonder if Amazon sees Google and Microsoft getting into their infrastructure as a service business and says, all right, I'm going to get into your Office applications business and let's do this. Let's see what happens. And we know that Jeff Bezos is willing to drive a market at low or no profit if he feels like eventually he can dominate. And so, like I said, maybe this is a trial balloon to see, like, am I going to get some uptake on a business app here? And if so, sort of a land and expand strategy.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I mean, everything's possible in an infinite world. I think that this is something that Amazon wants to be able to offer. If you're on the AWS platform and you're already using their IoT and you're using their S3 storage and blah, 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 then this is a sort of a developer tool. AWS wants to, they looked at Slack, which is probably based on AWS's platform. My guess would be is that they used information about how much money Slack is spending on AWS and how easy it would be to copy that software and just went, you know, not hard. Let's do that. You know, they've already got a lot of the underlying bits like the GPUs to do the transcoding. And a lot of this software is open source. It's not like any of the software is actually restricted or specially covered by patents or whatever. It's pretty straightforward. So I think in that sense, it doesn't take much. Also, what's interesting here is that AWS has priced it in pretty cheap. So $2.50 per user per month, whereas Cisco Spark is $20 per user per month to use that. Even the Pro Edition, which has lots of extra features, so if you want to compare that, is $15 per user per month. So very competitive in terms of pricing and definitely designed to bring people on board. It's not like a high margin, we're happy to take the Apple style of business, we're happy to take 15% of the market so long as we're making
huge margins.
Huge profit margins to compensate, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think Amazon's just saying, oh, yeah, we'll do the Android business for this and come in cheap, cost effective, and undercut our competitors and not have to do much to win a lot of revenue for not much work.
Right. That Slack idea is, I think, intriguing because Slack, while very popular, hasn't owned the market in the way that, say, Microsoft Office has in terms of business apps. So maybe that's a direction they think they can also get some traction in the business community with, is a Slack-like unified communication system outside of this sort of messaging, more that asynchronous chatting and stuff that you get in
Yeah.
Slack.
my point has always been is that asynchronous chat is absolutely the future of communication. This idea of having meetings and having everybody synchronously communicating with each other is a complete waste of time and not very effective going forward. You know, this idea of synchronous communications means people have to be in the same building or people have to be at the same time all meeting up on a web conference call. Whereas if you can start to use chat, well, then you actually don't need telephone calls and you don't need video conferencing. And increasingly, companies are wising up to this and saying, well, let's have chat rooms instead and use text to communicate with each other via chat windows. You know, whether this is already fairly popular anyway, in the sense that a lot of companies have already turned to Jabber and using Skype chat or instant messaging of some form to bypass having telephone calls and stuff. So, yeah, it's the emerging business.
Nice to see some competition, too. All right, headline three, Andy B, he wants more and faster. Arista co-founder Andy Bechtolsheim, he's taking standards body to task for moving too slowly in developing new network standards. This came out during a talk at a cloud conference. Arista's hoping to drive a grassroots movement to develop 800 gigabit per second optics rather than wait for the IEEE to get around to it.
Yeah, because the IEEE actually said nobody needs 800 gigabits per second, number one. Seriously, they've said, oh gosh, we're so tired from 400 gigabits per second. Somebody said, what about 800? And they said, 3-5 years, we'll start looking at that. And literally, that's what happened. Nobody needs 800 gigabits per second. Where have we heard that before, right?
Sure.
So Andy Bechtolsheim, of course, as Arista, has a very invested interest in making sure that 800 gigabits gets together. They were, of course, the vocal progenitors of the 25 gigabit per second standard. Without Arista moving early, we wouldn't have 25, 50, and 100 gig now. The IEEE would still be contemplating their navels and arguing over the color of the cables about 100 gig, actually, much less 400 gig. I was reading some documentations. The conference that this was held at, which was the Lindley Cloud Group, I've never heard of it, was very much a conference for the people who make the optics and the silicon and the standards around the layer one, layer two of Ethernet. And the presentations are very clear. You know, there's presentations there saying nobody needs 400 gig, nobody needs 800 gig. If you want to do 800 gig, you can just use MLAG or, you know, whatever. And there's another group saying we need to start moving forward to getting these 800 gig standards underway. So 8 times 100 gig or 4 by 200 gig is what they'll be. It needs to be a 200 gig signaling channel. So where today 25 gig and then 100 gig is 4 times 25. What we need to be clocking in at is 200 gig and having 4 200 gigs or maybe 8 100s. I don't know, whatever it'll be. Let the IEEE sort that stuff out. But the cloud companies need this. So Amazon, Taobao and Alibaba and Yahoo, these companies need this increasing high speed. And Arista, as we'll find out in the financial section of today's show, is supplying the chassis-based switches to these companies. So it was saying, we need 800 gigabit per second. We can't wait.
Yep, smart move.
Yeah, it is. But the question is, can Arista move the market here, right?
That's a question, yeah.
That's the question. The question here is that Arista, which is selling to the MSDCs, Cisco doesn't care because Cisco isn't selling product to the megascale data centers. It's, you know, making money in the enterprise. The enterprise doesn't need 800 gig. So without Cisco getting involved and with the Ethernet people or these, you know, optics people being very slow moving, tedious, they're going to say, well, Cisco's not doing anything, so we're not going to do anything. There's a fair chance of that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's not Cisco we have to worry that they are thinking about moving the market anymore. It is the giant data center folks. It is the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons who are putting the pressure on the industry to say, we do need this. And Arista's smart in lining up and saying, we're here to help. We're going to support. Let's push this and get it going. So I think Arista's on the right side of this.
I think customers need to be aware that Cisco isn't going to get behind this because Cisco doesn't have a dog in this hunt, as they say, if you want the metaphor, because Cisco's only market is the enterprise. It's effectively locked out of the megascale data centers today. So it's not going to be throwing resources at getting 800 gig to market to meet what customers want. So just be aware of that.
Sure. But Arista definitely has a stake in making it happen.
As we'll see in the financial results below.
Yes, more good stories to come up, but first, a short break to tell you about ExtraHop. ExtraHop is a leader in real-time IT analytics and pioneering wire data, the window into digital transactions. They provide insight across the IT environment from the data center to the edge to the cloud, which helps IT leaders make data-driven decisions that enable them to optimize performance, security, and customer experience. And for a long time, IT has thought of the network as either the plumbing or the problem. ExtraHop comes along and says the network becomes the biggest source of real-time visibility for IT. That's because ExtraHop does the analysis first and stores packets last, which they call wired data. That encompasses all the interactions between IT systems and the organizations that rely on them. Wired data is rich, real-time, observed and objective, and analyzing at scale transforms the network from just a transport function to the foundation of all digital experience. ExtraHop works with companies like T-Mobile, Google, Adobe, McKesson, Netflix, and Expedia to save them millions of dollars and thousands of hours, improving application response times by more than 70% and mean time to resolution by up to 90%. To learn more about ExtraHop and try it for yourself, visit them at www.extrahop.com/demo. That's extrahop.com/demo. Connect with them on Twitter at ExtraHop. And if you mention Packet Pushers, as we said earlier, you can get a free t-shirt. ExtraHop, it's instant insight for IT. Yeah. All right, headline 4, Azure growth tops other clouds. There's a new cloud survey out showing that Microsoft Azure is the fastest growing public cloud service, advancing 14% year over year in terms of users adopting the service. AWS still remains the leader in terms of adoption, but according to the survey, which was produced by RightScale, AWS growth was flat. Google Cloud was also up 5%.
Yeah, so Azure, of course, is growing off a very small base, like Google Cloud. Not that Google Cloud is actually small, but its ability to attract customers is limited. So Microsoft to get 14% year-over-year growth is actually quite modest. It's not exactly 30 or 50% like AWS was seeing in the early years. It's easy to get exciting numbers in terms of growing hard, but I also think Microsoft's now doing a better job of leveraging the enterprise customers that are out there and saying, let's get them up and into the deck. So then they're getting some acceleration. And, you know, we are several years into the public cloud trend, and it is about time the enterprise would start to consider taking on cloud as a serious thing. Not a surprise per se, predictable enough.
Yes, I think that's a good point that, of course, Azure's starting from a much smaller base than AWS, and it's always easy to grow when you're starting smaller. But I think the report also mentioned that more enterprises are taking a multi-cloud strategy. So just because somebody is in AWS doesn't mean the door is closed on other competitors. And maybe these results are kind of recognizing that.
That's what I think. It's just a factor that, you know, Azure is still a very much a multi-billion dollar enterprise. And as we'll see with Cisco's financial results later on, moving the needle on a many tens of billions of dollars of business is a significant challenge, but I think that Microsoft's finally getting some momentum around its Azure. Its long-term changes are working, and so it's moving forward. And I don't think RightScale, the source of the data here is a survey come from RightScale, and I don't think that they're got a particular dog in this hunt. So I don't think that they've put the fingers on the scale or have a particular viewpoint that would lean them one way or the other for or against AWS.
No, I don't think so, because they sell a cloud management service, which presumably works across multiple clouds. So they're not, I do agree that they aren't pushing one over the other. But we also have a link to the survey, which you need to fill out a form to get if you want, but it's there if you want it and you can parse the details yourself.
I still love the fact that the biggest cloud challenges is lack of expertise and security and managing spend, right? Those ones have been around since the first day of the cloud, and cloud companies which have spent billions on marketing their products haven't really overcome the same old problems yet.
They probably will never go away, those concerns.
Probably never, no.
All right, headline 5, Citrix adds SD-WAN to Azure. So speaking of Azure, Citrix, they've launched a version of their NetScaler SD-WAN product. You can deploy it as a virtual instance inside of Microsoft Azure, and the goal is to make it easier to connect your branch and remote office users to workloads and applications that you've got up in the Azure cloud.
Now, this is significant because just what we said in the previous article was that Azure is often the natural home for enterprise people to take their to the cloud, based if you're using Microsoft as your operating system and you're using Microsoft software. A lot of the other companies have struggled to get viable SD-WAN appliances into Azure because of the way Azure cloud front ends, and the same applies to AWS, because their front ends have certain limitations about how traffic gets in and out, your routing and default routing and how you create subnets and so forth. It's actually not easy to build an SD-WAN gateway into these public clouds. And so now having an SD-WAN appliance, but you spoke to them about this. What's your take on it?
Well, I mean, in some ways, I almost wondered, why do you need it to be SD-WAN? Because you're not, essentially, this is an endpoint. It's not, you're not initiating necessarily traffic where you need to do this. Do I want to go over which particular link? Because it's also, if you're going into public cloud, it has to be a broadband or public IP address anyway. So you couldn't use an MPLS connection up in here, you know, unless you're going through like an Equinix deal. On the one hand, I'm not sure if it's overkill or not. On the other hand, I think folks who need to get branches and users into the cloud where they've got applications and investment, this makes it a little bit easier, and that seems like a good way to go.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, if you've got a branch network all the way around and all of a sudden you want to connect to Azure, it's not a good idea. It's a fairly dumb idea, actually, to build a private WAN link from your private MPLS to Azure and go through. They have these direct links and direct connect services, and they're very expensive. They take a long time, and they don't actually give you very much flexibility or functionality much more sense to, you know, strap an SD-WAN, flip your offices, add an SD-WAN appliance to the internet connection and build a private, secure, overlaid WAN network to the cloud directly so that people's traffic can get straight there. So this is actually quite useful, I think. And I suspect Riverbed's doing it directly in response to customer requests.
Yes, this is Citrix, but we also at Network Field, they did hear from Riverbed that they've got, I don't remember if they have it or are working on it. I think they can do AWS, but yeah, so I think we'll see more of this coming from the SD-WAN vendors about trying to get an instance up in your favorite public cloud flavor.
And they actually control this instance directly from their platform. So it's not like it's a manual add on their Riverbed platform can just click it straight in and spawn an instance in Azure and do the whole front end thing. It's quite slick, actually.
It is slick, although with Citrix, you have to use the Azure front end to spin it up. It's part of the whole spinning up your virtual private cloud inside Azure. But once it's up and running, the SD-WAN endpoint connects back to your whole NetScaler system, and then you can manage it from your console there and do all your settings and configuration that way. So yeah, easy, make it easy.
Yeah, easy, simple, straightforward. Click it up, all of a sudden it's there. You can start building a WAN on internet connections. In fact, the hardest part of an SD-WAN these days is actually how do you track all of those internet connections, not actually running the routers and stuff, which is weird.
Headline 6, Verizon is getting a discount. We've been talking about this. Verizon, they made a bid to acquire Yahoo for $4.8 billion, is going to get a discount because of the revelations of a major breach that Yahoo suffered last year, or actually released, talked about last year, but happened before then. Reports are varying regarding the size of the discount. Bloomberg says $250 million. Reuters is saying it could be as much as $350 million. But the fact is, it looks like Verizon has negotiated itself a discount off the $4.8 billion acquisition price.
And why wouldn't you, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
One slightly used Yahoo. It's like 6 months ago, I was getting a bright, shiny, it was all great. And now it's sort of got, I'm finding dings in the side and it's got an extra 50,000 miles on the clock that it wasn't obvious. And maybe the tires are a bit more worn now that I've had a closer look. So yes, I think there's two sides to this. One set of articles that I've read sort of go, you know, why is Verizon actually buying this at all? It's obviously damaged goods. But the flip side of it is that the fact that Verizon is still talking to Yahoo is a signal that they're desperate to buy this business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I found that to be like, yeah, that's quite right. Yes, that is true. Yes.
Well, here's another sign of that desperation. Reuters is reporting that part of the deal requires Verizon to share, quote, the liability from potential lawsuits related to Yahoo's data breaches. So if they're willing to buy into that as well, then that is definitely, they are hungry for this.
Yeah. So I again, extraordinary that, you know, I'm going to buy this piece of your business, but I want you to carry the liabilities.
Yeah. That's some good negotiating.
There's not much left out of Yahoo. I mean, there's a big chunk of the remainder of the company that will be left behind has a bunch of, still has a $20 billion valuation with its assets in China and Japan and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. And just a reminder, Verizon also acquired AOL for $4.4 billion back in 2015. And I think the plan is to merge AOL's ad networking business with Yahoo's email and search and Messenger to try to squeeze some revenue, ad revenue out of it. But that's almost $9 billion if you add these both together. That's a lot of ad revenue you're going to have to get back.
Yeah, but that ad revenue comes from, it's easy enough to do if you're actually getting enough metadata and getting better targeted ads. Remember, that whole ad tech industry is driven by clicks.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of scummy, but hey.
You know. But apparently there's a lot of money in it.
Oh, yeah.
Or so Verizon thinks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, we just have another break to get a quick message from our sponsor, 1000eyes. And Greg, you can tell us about that.
Yeah, so 1000eyes, you've heard of them before on the show. They've been a longtime supporter. Thanks to them for that. Now, as your network expands to include internet services like Azure and other cloud providers, third party, you start to lose visibility into what the network looks like. And that's a huge problem when you're running critical applications there, websites, services, maybe your branch data is flowing over that. 1000eyes gives you visibility into the internet that your company will rely on, the corporate network as well. Now they've extended their service not just from the internet, but also into the corporate network, so you can put probes around. 1000eyes cloud agents are deployed in locations all across the globe, and enterprise agents provide additional visibility from within your own network. Together, you can use these vantage points to provide the most complete understanding of network topologies, dependencies, and behavior. So think about this. Remember we talked about an SD-WAN? but you've still got to know how your network's internet access is performing, but you've still got to know what your, maybe you've got some legacy WAN that's going to take a few years to get rid of, because it does, and maybe you want to monitor some stuff in the data center in your campus. ThousandEyes can bring all of these together into a single monitoring platform. So piece together these multiple layers of network insight, from BGP routing and DNS to web server and layer 3 performance. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root cause of problems like device faults, congestion, DDoS attacks, hijacks, route leaks, blah, blah, blah. Go and check out the data. You can get a much bigger sense out of all of this. But you can also share the problems and the data and the insights with both vendors and internally. So once you find a problem and you see it in ThousandEyes, you can just share the web page in there. That's a really impactful way to say, dear Mr. Carrier, your internet connection sucks. Here's the data.
Yeah, here's my evidence.
Here's my evidence. Go and fix that.
And now let's talk about that SLA.
Exactly. Now let's end how much rebate you're going to give me on my bandwidth now. So there is a special offer just for Packet Pushers listeners. Sign up for a free account at thousandeyes.com/packetpushers, and you can choose your free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before, because ThousandEyes is network intelligence you can actually see. So just remember, thousandeyes.com/packetpushers, and you'll get a free t-shirt.
All right. Wear it with pride. Unless you're going for sartorial flair like Craig.
Maybe we can sew collars on.
So there you go. That'll look good.
You think? Yeah.
I think that'd yeah, that'll look really nice. Back to the news. Headline 7, Cisco financials dip. Cisco reported quarterly financial results, and the overall revenue for the quarter is down 2% to $11.6 billion. Net income for the quarter is $2.3 billion, which is down 25% from this quarter last year. Wow.
Yes, like seriously, Cisco continues to shrink. This is its fifth consecutive quarter of shrinking on its revenue. So I think it peaked at around about $49.8 billion last year sometime, and it's been shrinking 2 to 5% per quarter since then. So now it's down towards the $49 billion mark in total revenue, for like yearly revenue, by the way. That's not quarterly revenue. I think this is absolutely significant, because many people see Cisco as a dominant, ever succeeding, ever larger, and it's actually not. It's shrinking substantially because it's hitched to the enterprise. And one of the things that I've often been saying and often challenged by people from the audience is, Cisco's not shrinking. Cisco's doing fine. Yes, Cisco is very profitable business. It has $70 billion in the bank. But here's the real story. Product sales were down 5%. Service revenue was up 5%. But in particular, switching revenue was down 5%. Network generation routing, that's carrier routing and enterprise routing, down 10%, right? And collaboration up 4%. So a bright spot is Cisco Spark, and WebEx is doing quite well. But data center was down 4%, which is significant. So, you know, the four things that are shrinking is the biggest business units that it has: switching, next generation routing, and data center, which is servers and switches, right? So not a great story for Cisco. Cisco's fine. Don't get me wrong. I'm not predicting the demise of Cisco. Relax. Cisco has $70 billion in the bank, $71.8 billion, but only $9.6 billion of it is in the US. So, yeah, interesting times for Cisco, seeing them shrink, and they must be having a lot of heartache internally, and I think they'd be looking at more headcount reductions in the near future.
Entirely possible.
Well, you shrink by that much, and you've probably increased your headcount. Keep in mind, so there's a few things come out of this as I did some reviews of various articles and financial analyst reports and stuff. The general sense is that Cisco will now start to think about very large acquisitions. We're talking $1 billion, multi-billion dollar acquisitions. We saw them recently make an acquisition of AppDynamics at $3.5 billion. Generally, people think that was badly done. They think they overpaid by about $1 billion or so. I don't know, whatever.
That was because AppDynamics was poised to go public, so it had a lot of money sitting on the table, so they were definitely in the driver's seat on that negotiation, I think.
Yeah, but $1 billion isn't like, I'll give you $50 million if you come over today. It's like, here's a 40% bonus for not going IPA, right? In a very real sense, they could have waited for the company to float and then bought it and probably got it for cheaper.
That's probably true, yeah.
Some people are sort of questioning the wisdom of that and just how good that deal was. And remember, AppDynamics is not an enterprise deal. It's an IoT deal. It's going to have to be a big acquisition, because Cisco is on a $49 billion worth of revenue. And if you want to start to grow that, you actually have to have significant revenues to move that needle. There's also a sense that they clearly overspent and overcommitted to ACI, the Application Centric Networking Initiative infrastructure. That was really supposed to like kill Arista and take back control of the enterprise and grow the enterprise marketing and get customers to throw out their data centers and buy new stuff. And obviously it hasn't done that. Now, that said, ACI was continuing to grow. The portfolio there is up 28% in that part of the ACI portfolio. So that's good for ACI, but I don't think it's the outcome that Cisco wanted. I think outcome was expecting much more. When you pay $1 billion for a company, you're actually looking for much better than that. Cisco's share price, however, did pop up quite nicely. And the reason was that Cisco increased the dividend by 9%. And customers right now, well, shareholders are very keen on dividends right now because there's not too many tech stocks. So the general consensus across the board is that Cisco is a boring, dull company with a nice dividend flow. And that makes it attractive to investors, particularly retirement investors who are locking into the shares.
Sure, look for value.
So that's why they got the pop.
Sticking with Cisco for headline 8, Cisco Strategies. There's a pretty good article from the website, The Next Platform. They've got a take on Cisco strategy in two key areas. That's selling into the hyperscale market and transitioning its business to more of a subscription model.
Yeah, well, my favorite part was when Chuck Robbins talked about this. Was one of the financial advisors actually said to him, so what are you doing in the megascale data centers? And he basically said, well, you know, there's a fixed list of 10 customers in the megascale data center, and we've been spending a lot of time with those customers, really focused on understanding the needs. Frankly, some of them are so big, they're a market of one and to themselves.
Yeah.
But if you look at those 10 would be down. In other words, we're selling less to them, but we're hoping we've got one of them. So we're actually hoping that sales will pick up. But so I don't think that they've really got much hope of picking up that market. I think there's, you know, companies like AWS have been vocally public about not liking Cisco's products and not liking doing business with the company. And that's why they've gone out and invented Whitebox and put that into the market. It's hard to see that this would change in a very short period of time.
Sure, sure. Although, according to this Next Platform article, Cisco is selling into these customers. It just may not be getting the margins or even the profit that it's used to in selling into the enterprise. And part of that strategy is Cisco, I think, is willing to take essentially a loss selling into these companies, one, to be in that market, and then two, to keep Arista and the Whitebox folks out as much as possible, or to a small degree anyway.
But the stories, you know, in talking with people who work at those companies and around the place, they just don't regard Cisco as a viable product set for the megascale data centers. They're happy to use a few of their routers at the edge of the network.
Sure.
You, do you know what I mean? Like, and they're happy to use Cisco in certain parts of their network. But when it comes to the megascale data centers, you know, where they buy several containers of switches and they don't buy the third-party optics, like Cisco makes $2 billion a quarter, as I understand it, in optics alone. And those products have 1,000% markup.
Yep.
So that $2 billion is virtually all profit. You know, those companies aren't going to buy optics. They're not going to contribute. Even if Cisco's just selling them the switches and letting them use their third-party optics and still offering, that's not going to make the money that Cisco needs.
Right.
So it's hard to see how Cisco comes out of this and grows their market share in these megascale. I think the thing that Cisco needs to be doing is in those data centers for credibility. If you're not supplying switches to Amazon and Azure, then you're not the Cisco that had the market dominance that I knew for the last 20 years.
Right. It's certainly, just from a perception point of view, not good to be in these cutting edge next generation data centers.
Well, Arista, we'll talk about Arista's results in a minute, but I tweeted out a link today to a graphic which shows that enterprise is already only 50% of the data center Ethernet market. This is just data center Ethernet. This is not IoT or consumable home Ethernet or campus Ethernet or wireless Ethernet. This is just data centers. The enterprise total TAM, according to Crehan Research, is that the enterprise is only 53% of the total data center market. And Arista's into the other 50% with the cloud providers, as well as getting some of that's why they're getting good traction. And Cisco's not in the megascale data centers at all, or the service providers for that matter, to some extent.
And one more point on this story. We also mentioned Cisco transitioning to more of a subscription business. The goal there is to help smooth out those ups and downs of traditional product sales and also boost revenues by adding more services around automation and analytics that can ride on top of those product sales, and has some data points on how Cisco's making that transition over time, but it's going to take a little bit more work.
Yeah, the analysts love that. They want to see that Cisco is replacing sales. So if your sales are falling, what you want to do is replace it with something else. And so SaaS is the model that Cisco is going to go for because that's a model that everybody else is doing. So again, following the market, not making the market. And they've been switching into services which are cloud-centric that they can offer people who've got very natural, very obvious. The take-up there is slow. So they are growing that market 1% every quarter or so. But people are sort of, if you're a long-time believer in Cisco stocks and you sort of read them, people are thinking, well, maybe Cisco's got something. If any time now, it's going to break out. You believe that.
All right, our final headline, Arista Networks closes out 2016 on a high note. They reported their Q4 and full year results for 2016. The company posted revenues of $328 million for the quarter, which is up 33% over the last year and also up 13% from Q3.
Yeah, big, big quarter. And even more so, their shares popped like mad. Share price shot up by 12%, I think, which was quite astonishing. So good for them. Basically, it would seem that I was reading a report. Yeah, they popped from, what is it, $100 to $117 straight after announcing those results and still rising this morning. So pretty good for them. The story basically goes is that huge growth. They're specifically called out shelling chassis Ethernet switches to the megascale data center providers, and that the impact of white box, that it was sort of felt that this time last year that white box in the form of Facebook's Open Compute and the Project Wedge, which was the chassis-based switch, would have started to have an impact on Arista's sales, and that doesn't seem to have happened. And so we've seen Open Compute a few weeks ago. We talked about Project Backpack, which is a second generation of the Wedge, which is a new version of it based on the latest chipsets with some substantial changes to the design. But on the whole, the white box chassis hasn't taken off the way it was expected, and so the impact hasn't hit Arista's revenue, and so they're growing nicely.
Yeah, the article we mentioned previously said that in talking to the giant data center, the web folks, they aren't really all that excited about having to build their own equipment. They'd love to buy it from somebody else just to take that hassle off their hands, but they haven't found satisfactory products on the market, except it seems in terms of Arista, who's doing well on the chassis side.
That's right. I think my belief is that the cloud companies actually, I have said this many times on various podcasts in the Packet Pushers network, networking at the end of the day is 5% or 10% of an overall infrastructure cost. So if you improve your networking by 20%, you actually don't move the needle on your infrastructure. You know, you might improve it by 0.5% on the overall. So it's not worth the time and effort to change things. And I think the cloud companies are going, yes, we have to do something at top of rack because that's a lot of money. And what we get at top of rack is rubbish. But Arista's coming along and, you know, in the sense that if I go and buy something from Arista, Cisco, Juniper, Brocade, they're going to charge me so much money, it's not going to be what I want. And between the money and the flexibility and the speed, I need features at the edge of the network. When it comes to Ethernet chassis, I want something that's rock stable, proven, does the things that I want. And I think Arista's been flexible enough giving the cloud providers the features that they ask for. You know, they do run on Linux. They do run a modern software development cycle. You know, people tell me that Arista products are far more reliable and stable than their competitors. And that's what the cloud companies want. And they're sort of, if I was a cloud company, I might be saying, you know what, that switch works near enough. I'm paying a bit extra for it, but it's doing what I need. I've got other things to do over here in my Amazon Chime service, you know,
or exactly,
you know, whatever it is, I'll come back to that later. Just buy the Aristas, let's move on, sort of thing.
Well, for that strategy, it seems to be working. For all of 2016, Arista posted revenues of $1.1 billion, which is up almost 35% over 2015. So that's pretty good growth.
And the lawsuit doesn't seem to have an impact.
So far, no.
You would have sort of thought that the lawsuit might have slowed down customers on Arista or Arista's ability to ship product, and they seem to have been able to get ahead of that. So that must be upsetting people inside of Cisco who seem to be taking this lawsuit personally.
Yes. Although I will say, as a point of comparison, all of Arista's revenue for 2016 was $1.1 billion. Cisco's quarterly revenue was $2.3 billion. So there's just a point of comparison when we're, yep, you know, sort of crowing about Arista's growth. Like we said with Azure, they're starting from a smaller base.
Yes, a much smaller base. So yes. But it is nice to see a company that's basically focusing on one thing and producing a quality thing as opposed to feature rich and overdone and overblown and, you know, running around. It's just nice to see a very solid business doing its thing instead of trying to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm. Very focused.
Well, I believe so, yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Network Break. Greg, where can folks get more from you?
They can find me doing some microblogging at etherealmind.com. I'm also got lots of stuff happening on the Twitters and LinkedIn and Facebook. You can follow me there. I try and make sure that anything I'm doing on Twitter now spills into Facebook and LinkedIn. If that's your favorite place to consume that, au revoir.
You're also doing more on YouTube.
Yes, we've set up a Packet Pushers channel, and Ethan and I are working our way through the pain of watching ourselves on video and editing it. I've just recorded a 30-minute session on network disaggregation, and that will probably go out over the weekend. So By the time you hear the show on Monday, there'll probably be something on YouTube for me ranting on about network disaggregation on YouTube.
All right, go take a look. Yeah. And I'm Drew Connery Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM, and I blog at packetpushers.net. Thank you to our sponsors, Extra Hop and Thousand Eyes. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, give us a like on Facebook, give us a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your friends. And please check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine, of which we just shipped issue 50, and Link Propagation. You can find out how to sign up for those for free at packetpushers.net. And don't forget all the free, fine technical content over at packetpushers.net. And thank you for listening.